This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Patrick here on your Monday. We got a heck of a show for you. Dr. Joe's going to join us here in the 4 o'clock hour here. I got a guest coming in here in a second, but I got to... Okay, so something happened this weekend, and I this goes back to my traffic reporting days years ago, and I used to do... I was at Metro Traffic. So I make no bones about it. I think this... I think there's great having a carpool lane, but turning them into toll lanes so wealthy people can basically have a class-tiered roadway system is, I think, a really bad way to have traffic. I mean, it's basically like the haves and the have-nots. And I've been very vocal about it. It's if you ever do the toll lanes, there have been most years I don't think they make their money back. They actually lose money on granting people, wealthy people, basically, access to the carpool lane as a toll lane. And like I said, I'm not a big fan of class tiered roadways. I'm just not. That being said, so on Saturday, my wife had her official, it wasn't a holiday, it's their annual get together for her company. Her company had their annual get together, their annual shindig. And I was driving downtown. I was coming in on 394, and I was like, wow, they've got it. It was 50 cents. Usually it's 25 cents is the dirt cheap. I said, must be some traffic heading into the downtown. There wasn't any. And so now are we actually just trying to make money off of this now? It's kind of one of those things where we're just trying to make money, and it's trying to you know, gouge people, because I didn't think that was the purpose of it. The purpose I thought was to try to relieve traffic by trying to get wealthy people to take the secondary road, not basically trying to gouge people. Now, I was carpooling, so I didn't have to pay a dime. But that being said, if we are now charging higher rates, even when there's not traffic, it's just a Saturday night and you want to try to capture some people going downtown, that wasn't what that thing was designed for. I got to make some calls on that. I was a little bothered. By the way, Patrick, the shindig, delightful. They had a taco bar. It was absolutely amazing. Oh, your choice of corn or flour tortilla, my friend. And I love when I go to a place and they have appetizers, and those appetizers are more like a meal. They had a carving station. A carving station! It was delightful. I was very bad at bingo and at cornhole, just FYI. Well, I'm wounded. Of course I'm going to be bad at cornhole. I think I strained myself picking up the bean bags. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You want top-notch quality radio? Well, you're not going to get much better than the Rick Smith Show, which we have on weeknights here on AM 950. Joining us right now to talk about union issues and the Republican issues is Rick Smith. He's taking some time out of his day to join us. Hey, Rick, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time. It's always a privilege to have you on with us here. And if you're not listening to the Rick Smith Show, weekday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on AM 950. It is a must listen. It's an absolutely fantastic show, especially if you're big on the union issues. That is the show you need to be listening to. I want to get your thoughts on some of the things that we've seen that the Republicans have introduced in this early session of the U.S. House, namely two. One, getting rid of the IRS completely and installing a 30 cents on the dollar federal sales tax. And, well, actually, I'll tell you what, let's start there. Let's start with the insanity of something of that nature, because as we all know, sales taxes are regressive taxes, so the working class is going to take it right in the trousers if that happens.
No, absolutely. And it goes back to the frame. Republicans hate working people. Just look at what they come up with. Look at the schemes and the plots that they come up with to dig into our pockets. And I heard a second ago you talking about the toll roads. You go down south, go into Florida, everywhere you go down there, there's a toll road that you can pay for, or there's the crowded road that everybody else goes on. It's just another way to extract money from working people.
Absolutely.
At every opportunity, so we don't have to tax the wealthy. This is all of these schemes come down to the very simple premise of the Republican Party, and some Democrats are in the pockets of our billionaire class. Anything to make them wealthier, anything to make them more powerful, they're going to do. And anything to stick it to the working class and make work more desperate and wages more of a poverty-level wage, they're all in favor of. Because we need pliable workers to take crummy jobs to clean up after our wealthy.
This is one of those things that you hear Republicans out there talking about, like, oh, this is a fair tax. This is one of those taxes where everyone pays it. But, you know, it's a cloak of a mist over the reality, which is, once again, if you're a millionaire, if you're a billionaire, you know, that's not really a big hit. Plus the fact that a lot of those people, they're not buying stuff here in the United States. They'll buy stuff elsewhere because they have the money to do so. This is, if you're looking at a 30 cents per dollar sales tax on the working class, that's every dollar of groceries, every dollar of gas, yep. Every dollar of this. You are really going to take it hard. I mean, 30 cents, they say, oh, well, this is not bad because it gets rid of the IRS. The reality is we're ending up paying a dramatic amount more just so that the wealthy people don't have to pay any much. And I still am of the mindset, too, that the Republicans will introduce loopholes to prevent wealthy people from having to pay that 30 cents on the dollar tax because they're wealthy.
Absolutely. Look at Reagan's tax reform bill of 86.
Yep.
We taxed
yep.
for the first time unemployment benefits. So workers who have been kicked while they were down, we never did that before. But during the Reagan years, we began taxing unemployment benefits. So everyone who had to collect unemployment during the pandemic, you remember getting those things that you had to pay taxes on. This is this is what Republican policy gets us. And again, I come back to this different vision. You know, we go down to Florida for Christmas every year, and the kids are keenly aware of the differences between Pennsylvania and Florida. You want to go to a public park here in Pennsylvania? It's free. The taxpayers have funded that. It's something that our tax base does. You go to Florida, you want to go to a public park, dig into your pocket, you're going to pay. You want to drive across the street to get to the stadium to see a hockey game, you're going to have to pay a toll road. You do that here, the roads are paid. So it's a difference in mentality of how they're getting us. And in conservative areas, it's all about being in your pocket every second of the day and controlling your behavior by how little you have to spend. This is not new. This is what they've been doing for a very long time. It's their belief structure. And again, it's about sticking it to the little guy.
You know, it's interesting you bring this up because I've been to Pennsylvania. You live in a gorgeous state, and I've been to Pittsburgh, Philadelphia. Gettysburg is a wonderful, a must-visit destination for anyone that is an American, I think. You got to go. There's a lot of great places out there. I went out from Minnesota to South Dakota, and I went out to Rushmore. And when you get out to you know, the West, and you're there, the Rapid City, you know, the first thing you notice is it's like some sort of dystopian world where almost all the people live in like mobile homes in the bottom of the hill, and there's a handful of wealthy people at the top of the hill in their gilded mansions looking down on the poor. And, you know, the roads are garbage. Outside of the one major park, there's some stuff, nice stuff in the downtown, but the rest of the town is just garbage. I mean, it's amazing how little, when you get to conservative states, how little they're doing for their citizens. And yet they keep voting Republican, which is the thing which really blows my mind.
Well, it comes back to that meme that you see going around the internet. You know, I vote Republican. I may not have much, but I vote Republican so I can make sure that those people behind me have even less.
Yep.
And that's kind of the mentality. I mean, sadly, and here's the weird thing, and I've been on this kick for the last couple of weeks. We've got to start defunding some of these failed states. You look at Mississippi, Alabama, you look at Arkansas, who, you know, I don't know if you saw that story of the guy that they locked up for a year and starved to death in solitary confinement because he pointed his finger. I mean, disgraceful. But, you know, you look at the amount of federal money that goes into these states, and you have someone like Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, you know, Washington's hand stops at the cold water of wherever the heck she was talking about. We don't want Washington here, but we'll take your money. And this is where I go, you know, at some point, you know, states like New Jersey and Massachusetts and California have got to go, you know what, we're tired of paying for these welfare states.
Yeah.
It's time to stop paying for these failed states who keep pushing us in a direction that is going to make our country worse. It's going to make us weaker, and it's going to harm the working class, as we've seen. Look, you look at those states, higher death rates, lower life expectancy, higher infant mortality rates, higher poverty rates, higher rates of uninsured, higher rates of no retirement. All the negatives are really high and all the positives really low, and yet we're funding this with our tax dollars. It's time we start defunding them.
Well, and it's funny you say that. There's a local politician here in Minnesota who said Minnesota's turning into California and Illinois. I said, wait a second, we are? California's got the fifth biggest... Yeah, too. That's the fifth biggest economy on the planet. Illinois is the fifth biggest in the country. You know, I don't, you know, if you want to badmouth us, call us Mississippi or West Virginia, because, I mean, that's where you really, I mean, those are the states that are having the issues. Yeah, it is this broken mentality. And if I can, let's look at the other thing which the Republicans want to do. This is the negotiation of the debt ceiling. And the fact that they are now trying to, because they know it's going to be harder from them from here on out to win majorities, to win this, because, you know, Generation Z is turning on them and turning on them in pretty atrocious numbers for Republicans. The thing what they're doing now is trying to get a minimal hold, a 10-seat majority in the House, and then use that to completely underwrite Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. Every government social safety net program has to go or else. And these, you know, they're quite literally the guy holding the gun to their own head, and yet they seem intent on going through with this. And if it means destruction of the U.S. economy, it means the destruction of the U.S. economy.
No, and the global economy. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, as the U.S. go, the globe goes as well. Mm-hmm. These are folks who, there are a number of them, and it's more than I think people, you know, everyone says, oh, it's the 20. It's more than that. These are folks who want to shoot the hostage. You know, every time we come down to these debt ceiling crises, you know, we have these 24 like ticking bomb moments where we're ticking down to the last second. You know, there are people who they want to shoot the hostage. They want to see what's going to happen, because the cruelty is the point. The point is, how bad can we make people's lives? You know, you go back to that tax thing. You know, we heard all up until the election, up until the day of the election, we heard nothing but about inflation and how inflation was killing us. Do you know what a 30% tax on every product you buy will do to inflation, especially for people at the bottom end of the economic spectrum who don't pay? You know, the Mitt Romney 47% who don't pay federal taxes. Those are the people who are going to take it on the chin. And the problem here is, it's not just the inflation from the prices going way up. It's the problem of deflation when people don't have money to buy anything. And then we have another depression. And there's part of me that goes, they want to shoot the hostage to see, will that really happen? And that's the frightening part here, because these people have no conscience. They have no shame. But it doesn't mean they're not willing to do horrible and dangerous things. Just look at what they've proposed. Now, Social Security, the mentality is, we have to save it. Got to save Social Security. And how do we save it? Well, by destroying it.
Yes.
We'll destroy it, and then, well, we'll bring it back, and it'll be, you know, a quarter of the benefit down the road, or if anything. Their wet dream list.
Well, and I was going to say, we should remind people that as they talk about these cuts, it's not like you're going to get that money back. This is all about trying to find pockets of money still within the federal government that they can just give to the wealthiest Americans as a thank you, remember me come campaign season, and remember me when I retire so I can get that big lobbying gig. And so they're looking,
Absolutely.
They look at the post office, they look at NASA, the Social Security, Medicaid. You're not going to get your money back. That is all money for wealthy people, so that these guys can get a good job when they're done. And that's all this is. So it really is. It's not only are they killing the program, but they're not going to give you the money back either.
Isn't it remarkable, though, when you stop and think about it? Because if you know anything about Social Security, by law, it cannot add to the debt and deficit.
Yes.
So the fact that they're pulling this into a deficit, into a debt fight, is telling that this is the first club out of the bag. This is where their mind is. Not about scrapping the cap. If you really wanted to save Social Security and Medicare, you'd scrap the cap, and everyone would pay the same percentage of their income all the way up, like they want to do with their rehashed flat tax kind of sales tax scheme that they've dreamt up. It's amazing to me that we as working people don't do like the folks in France do. I don't know if you paid attention last week, but the workers were in the street in France because they want to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. Right now, they're telling us in this moment, not 62, 64, 70 we got to get to. Hey, we got to do this. We don't have a choice.
Did you see that knucklehead Republican who was screaming, I know a lot of people who want to work until 80 years. 80 years old, for goodness sakes.
And good, look, if you can still be functional and work into your 70s and 80s, God bless you, do it. Nobody's stopping you. But what about those people who are busting their behinds working construction, working trucking jobs, working, you know, heavy physical labor jobs whose bodies, sorry, not going to make it into their late 60s, probably won't even make it to 65. I know guys who are in their 50s who are broken down and are just dying to get the social Medicare age so they can retire. For me, this is, again, another one of these moments where as a working class, we've got to reclaim our ability to have some dignity and respect in old age. This is about destroying that and making us more desperate, making us more exploitable, and also stealing from us. Because, again, you go back to and look at the policies Reagan era forward. All this neoliberal supply-side voodoo Reaganomic nonsense has done nothing but rob the working class of this country. We've got a billionaire class who the hardest work they do all day is moving money from one pocket to the other, from yours to theirs. And we've got to come up with policies, and we've got to stand together to stop this.
I always love it when Republicans scream, you're trying to do class warfare. So I get news for you. Class warfare is going on, and middle and lower class are getting their ass handed to them. Let's just be honest about it.
No, Warren Buffett said it. You know, my class is winning, but we shouldn't be. And they shouldn't be. Because, again, while they have all the money, we've out-procreated them. There's four of us. If we would put down the nonsense, we would put down the outrage candy, we'd put down the things that are shoved down our throats every day to divide us, maybe we would start talking about what is really important, how we feed our children, how we provide a roof over their head, how do we protect our health, our retirement security, how we have a life worth living to where we work to live, not live to work. Maybe that would be a good place to start. Maybe once we take off the red hats and the blue hats and pick up a hard hat, maybe we'll get our minds right.
Do you want a good union story to finish out with today?
Hit me.
All right. A Twin Cities Painters Union is taking on mental health with a new program for Minnesota union workers that provides on-site counseling and intervention training for construction workers. The goal is to tackle the high rates of suicide and substance abuse in the construction industry head-on to make it much easier to help get access without stigma, said the organizers. The Care Team program was launched this month by the 3,500-member International Union of Painters and Allied Trades District Council, DC 82, and the Finishing Trades Institute of the Upper Midwest, both of Little Canada, Minnesota. That is, I love stories like this because, once again, there's the people that know the workers, know the needs of the workers, are seeing that their needs are not being met, and the union itself goes on out there and makes a program to basically try to cut down on suicide rates and substance abuse within the union. Outstanding.
No, outstanding. And look, that comes from their president, Jimmy Williams Jr., who we've had on the show a number of times. It comes from the IUPAT's international. And look, the building trades right now, if you really want to talk about the future of the country, looking at what the building trades does is really, really a good model. These are folks who right now are pushing for maternity leave. They're pushing for mental health. They're pushing for making sure that people have health security, retirement security, and doing it in a way where their members are all gig workers. They work for various contractors throughout the year, but their benefits, their pay, all of that stuff is negotiated in a contract. So for me, the way forward is getting people to join these unions and these guilds and these crafts and come together and say, you know what, we're going to withhold our labor unless we have a floor in which we stand. So that we can work any gig job you want, but you know what, we're going to make a living wage. We're going to have health security. We're going to get some retirement security. And you're not going to be a gazillionaire off of exploiting our labor. And until we do that, well, we're going to still have a billionaire class who's able to buy our politics.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I think that it's seeing the unions. I mean, this is, once again, why are unions so valuable? They still care for the worker. And as much as, a lot of companies, there are a lot of great companies out there that do care for their employees, but there's a lot that don't. And there's a lot of CEOs and executives that could care less about their employees. So it is nice to see the union stepping up there and helping out when they can. Absolutely, for sure. You're on tonight. Anything special coming up on the 8 to 10 o'clock hour tonight?
We're going to spend a lot of time on the environment. We've got some folks talking about a new report coming out on how we can get to a cleaner, greener economy, save the planet, create jobs, that kind of good stuff that we want to be moving towards. Also, the Social Security thing, front and center. The reality is this is a moment when someone tells you who they are, You should believe them. And the Republicans have told us again and again and again and again and again that they hate working people. This, again, is another moment where they're proving it.
Absolutely.
The Social Security, the IRS thing, you know, all of this stuff. Again, that's the point. And when, the sooner we working people wake up, the better off we're all going to be.
Rick Smith, The Rick Smith Show, 8 to 10 o'clock tonight here on AM 950. Rick, absolutely sensational stuff. We'll spotlight this interview. Thank you so very much. We're look forward to chatting with you in the near future again.
Thanks, brother. And I wish you the best as you're healing up, and I hope you get back on your feet soon.
Yes, I am still broadcasting from the palatial downstairs basement of the McNeil Mansion here, so I hope to be back at the station before too much longer.
Well, we care about you, brother.
Thank you, sir. Rick Smith, The Rick Smith Show, 8 to 10 on weeknights here on AM 950. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Everybody looking for a dance floor to run on.
If you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Thanks to Rick Smith for joining us here today. Patrick, I had not had a chance to say hello to you. How was your weekend? Did you have a good weekend out there?
I was pretty good. I just kind of, I did a hockey game on Saturday. That was about it for exciting things I did this weekend. Did you find anything cool to watch over the weekend?
I did. The Banshees of Inisherin. I saw that. That's the one that's getting a lot of Oscar buzz. A very Irish film. I mean, first of all, I'm going to just say, I'm okay. And if you don't know, I've got some very dear friends in Ireland. I've been over there multiple times. The godparents of my kids are all Irish in Ireland. And it's a, you know, so I kind of, you know, I'm not an expert by any means in the Irish culture, but I've got a lot of experience with the Irish culture. Enough experience to where I'm watching this, this movie, The Banshees of Inisherin, and of course they're on this island. It takes place on this island off the coast of Ireland. All right. And they're pouring Guinness out of bottles, and yet they're getting that nice firm head that you get only from a tap on Guinness. And I was like, oh, that's not right. So, I mean, it gives you a little, I know when you pour a Guinness, that's not how it looks out of a bottle. I'm just letting you know. So just kind of one of those things where it's, you kind of get the, I got a little bit of culture there. It is an insanely Irish film. It is a dark comedy. And I mean, heavy on the dark comedy. I mean, it is tough to watch, especially probably the last third of it is really tough to watch. But I can completely see how the four actors, the leads in there, Colin Farrell, oh God, I can't remember them off the top of my head. Colin Farrell and the rest of the crew, they all deserve Oscar nods. I mean, they are just phenomenal in this. Have you seen that one yet at all?
I have not.
No, you haven't? Yeah, it's like I said, it is very Irish, and I mean, it's stunningly beautiful. I mean, it's just this gorgeous, this gorgeous scenery that you see that's just everywhere out, especially in the western side of Ireland. It's just absolutely gorgeous out there. And by the way, Colin Farrell has won a lot of the best of categories, including, I think, the Golden Globes. He won for that one there. And, they've got Best Director, Best This, and I'm rolling through here the Best, they won't tell me the name. I'm going to get this here. Barry, what's the name? Carrie Condon, what plays the sister. She's fantastic. Barry Connens, I think it's how you say his last name. He was in a few other movies. He plays kind of the local idiot there, which is pretty funny. It's just go see it. I mean, I will say once again, very. It's going to be one of those that it's tough to get through that third, you know, part of it, the last third of it, but it's a good film. Brendan Gleeson, by the way, Brendan Gleeson, of course, who's Mad-Eye Moody. You've seen Harry Potter, right?
Yes, I have seen those movies.
Yeah, the guy that plays Mad-Eye Moody, who, by the way, was phenomenal in Mercedes Man. That adaptation they did of the Stephen King book, I think it was on Apple TV. That was Brendan Gleeson, too. Also just absolutely sensational. You know, he gave his all in that story. I'll just leave it like that. He gave his all. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want to come back. I'm going to take a break. Come on back. I have got to tell you how stunningly shocked I am at the response to something I posted this weekend in regards to guns in the wake of yet another mass shooting here in the United States. And I'm stunned. How the pro-gun kooks are looking at gun rights in this country. It is wildly disturbing. I'll explain that here in just a bit. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Wow, already a heck of a show. Rick Smith already will spotlight that interview. Patrick's Johnny on the spot. He might have it already done. Dr. Joe is going to join us. Dr. Joe Eastman, our COVID modeling expert. We're going to talk with him about what he is seeing through his numbers. That's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. 952-946-6205. So, we had yet another tragic shooting here in America. Just unbelievable. Just, you know, it's, you know, I don't know if you're new to the show, you may not know that my son, last 4th of July, I was at the Edina 4th of July parade. I just gave way too much of a hug to Senator Ron Latz. I had just seen, Crockett came by, and my son calls, and he says, "Dad, I just want to let you know I'm at a parade. There's been a shooting. We're all okay. Just wanted to give you a heads up." I said, "What? Where are you?" It was in Highland Park. He was down visiting with his girlfriend, their family, in Chicago, and was there. And once again, the violent string of gun slaughters in this country rang out, where a person who, if they had a pipe, or if they had an axe, or if they had a knife, might have killed one or two people, but wouldn't have created the carnage that they do. Just shut up with that comparison. You are taking weapons of military use designed to kill as many human beings, not turkeys, not pheasant, not mallards, not deer, humans, designed to kill as many human beings as possible, as quickly as possible. And you have basically created a free-for-all in this country where mentally compromised individuals can get these weapons and do the maximum amount of damage. And you then scream, "How dare you look at the gun?" Gun kooks are broken freaking people. And I never realized it until how broken they have become. And part of this, you see, is part of the problem that we have in this country is that when a deranged psychopath kicked in an elementary school door and slaughtered young children, we as a country did nothing. A travesty. And all the people behind us doing nothing, you're all going to burn, man. You all are going to burn. Because how in the world do you think that it's Christian in any capacity to look at young children getting slaughtered in elementary school and saying, this is the way we should be? But the money from the NRA and the right-wing politicians and a handful of Democratic politicians all sat there and said, let's not get too hasty. Let me tell you something, you chumps. When 7 and 8 year olds are being turned into hamburger in a classroom because of an assault weapon, it's time to get freaking hasty. Instead, we as a society made the statement of, well, there's nothing we could do about it. And there was tons we could do about it. We just decided we weren't going to. And it was at that point, when you have guns killing young children en masse, that we could have done something about it. But when we didn't, you basically enabled the gun kooks to a level which is unbelievable. I guess it shouldn't be a surprise. Now this seems to be the trend. Shooting up the 4th of July parade where my son was at. Now it's a Chinese New Year's, a Lunar New Year celebration in Monterey Park, California. 10 people dead. An 11th if you count the shooter who died of a self-induced gunshot wound. They could have been much worse if not for the second club. A staff member, actually a family member of the owner of the club, grabbed the gun out of the man's hands before he fled. The next day, Bring Me the News posted this story a bit locally. A person was shot in the leg during a fight inside the Brooklyn Park bowling alley just after 12 midnight on Sunday morning. According to Brooklyn Park police, the incident happened at 12:07 a.m. Sunday morning at Bolero, with officers arriving to find the victim outside after being shot in the leg inside the building. Video posted online shows people scrambling after the apparent gunshot is heard. Police say they learned that two groups got into a fight before one person pulled a gun, fired a shot. The witness confirmed seeing one person with a gun. The suspects were gone from the scene by the time the police arrived. They'll find you. I've got news for you. They're going to find you. There's no cameras here, are there? Dude, everyone was holding a camera. You're driving, what is it? What was the address there? In Brooklyn Boulevard, 7545 Brooklyn Boulevard. I guarantee there's at least 5 or 6 major traffic cameras that record weeks worth of stuff. So they'll track. They know what car you left in. They know which direction you drove. They're going to catch you. Good luck with all that. That being said, I made a tweet. Because I'm not so much with the Monterey Park, California shooting, but with this shooting here, I have very little doubt that this is an illegally obtained gun. I do not think that someone went out, did their due diligence, went to a gun dealer, filled out their form, went through the waiting period, got their gun, got the carry and conceal permit. You know, I doubt that that was the case. My guess is this was an illegally purchased gun that was there. And I made this point. At this point, we should just have a mandatory 20-year sentence for anyone illegally selling a gun. Now, it's very clear I write illegally selling a gun. If you had that, the illegal guns would dry up really quick and the number of gun crimes would plummet. It would. It's the dirty little secret of the gun of gun violence, is that there's a shocking amount of guns right now which are on the streets that are illegally sold there. And if you basically made it a mandatory 20-year sentence, and I'm one of these people that I don't even think you should be able to sell it to a family member without going through the right process. That it should be illegal to, well, my Uncle Cletus, who's basically been called to the cops because of domestic violence 18 times, I just want to make sure he had a gun. Who could have ever foreseen him shooting his wife? Yeah, exactly. I personally think there should be zero exceptions. These are guns. These are not toys. These are dangerous things. We should treat them like that. Then they should not be any. If there's a way you can legally sell them, fine. But if anyone does it illegally, and I've once again illegally selling guns, that's what I was very clear about. Put them away for 20 years. End of story. End of discussion. I guarantee you start locking people up. Especially, frankly, my guess is going to be rural white people who are coming into the city and selling guns to black people because they can get away with it. You start locking some of them up for 20 years, guess what's going to happen? I guarantee, I'm not saying you're going to completely dry up the illegal gun trade, but it's going to be incredibly a lot more expensive. It's going to get a lot of the guns off the street, and crime will go down. It will. I was stunned. Stunned when all of a sudden I got pushback on this. On the idea that we, by in Minnesota, we basically make it a 20-year mandatory sentence for illegally selling a gun. And all of a sudden, how dare you? The responses range from you can't even ever try to ever do anything to regulate guns, period, to even going as far as, how dare you, or why are you against capitalism? What? What? I'm against capitalism because I want to basically stop illegal gun sales. By the way, just this coming in right now, two students dead, a teacher injured at a shooting in Des Moines, Iowa, at a charter school. This is America. This is America. There is something seriously wrong when I say, well, we should put out some tough legislation and lock people up who are illegally selling guns. They lock them up mandatory 20 years. And the people, what are you talking about? Now, I want to make sure we talk about one very ugly element about conservatives and guns. Do you know how Republicans like to go, Chicago? Now, first of all, and what they're saying is basically there are gun laws in place in Chicago, but there's tons of guns in Chicago, and there's gun crime there, so clearly you can't do anything at all to try to stop this. Don't even try. This is the cost of freedom, and I'll get back to that here in a second. What they don't want to talk about is two things. One, that Republican politicians have defunded any kind of enforcement ability to go on out there. They basically made it almost impossible for people to be able to enforce the laws. And they know this. And this is the great crime. They know that these laws can't be enforced. So when they say, why aren't you just enforcing the laws on the books? They purposely are ignoring the fact that they have made those laws moot because there is no money for people to enforce them, or the enforcement if there were people that were hired to enforce those laws. Fact. Number two, let's talk about Indiana for a quick sec. Do you know where most of those illegal guns in Chicago come from? Republican Indiana. And Illinois and Chicago have multiple times asked Indiana to shore up their work, and they just don't seem to wanna. They seem to have no problem shipping all the guns out there. The conservatives of Indiana have no problem with the amount of illegal guns that seem to come out of Indiana that get on the streets of Chicago. Especially when it comes to those conservatives going, Chicago, They create the mess so that they then can discount any enforcement. That's a fact. That being said, it is stunning to me where we are at as a country when I just say, hey, if you illegally sell a gun, you go to jail for 20 years. And Matt, how dare you again? Are you against freedom? Jesus. Illegal gun sales. Illegal ones. Not legal ones. Illegal ones. Nope, we are not supposed to even try, apparently, to stop illegal gun sales. Ludicrous. On top of that, let me give you two little quotes, gems that come after the shooting in California. Lauren Boebert, a mass shooting is a small price to pay to protect our Second Amendment rights. Wow. A mass shooting is a small price to pay to protect our Second Amendment rights. Wow. I looked into it a little bit. I couldn't find it. I'm hoping that's a parody quote. I'm hoping it is. But that seems to be the mentality. that it seems to be that Republicans today have the mentality that someone could go into every elementary school in the country and slaughter every child in America from age 6 to age 10, every single one of them, with guns, screaming guns the entire time as they do it. And Republicans will sit there and say, you know, it's not ideal and all, but it's still better than trying to limit this from happening. This is, we are in broken freaking times. How about Representative Mike Loychik? An AR-15 today is no different than a musket in 1791. Okay, counterpoint, yes it is. An AR-15 today has a magazine that can shoot off, what is it, 12? Is it 10? 10 is the one that magazine that comes with it. You can easily get a 12, 15, or go get one of those banana clips that allow you to really go at 40, 50 sometimes. Tape them together, got a ton of rounds in those. A front-loading musket took you usually a minute to reload. I have been to historic Fort Snelling. That was the 1820s. They have the demonstration. It wasn't a quick process. So first of all, Representative Mike Loychik, you're a moron. Because, no, those are wildly different. That'd be like saying a slingshot is the same thing as an ICBM missile. No, those are wildly different things. He then goes on, because idiot boy can't stop the pie hole, an AR-15 is the exact type of weapon the Founding Fathers had in mind when they wrote the Second Amendment. No, they didn't, because there wasn't any multi-shot weapons available at the time. Maybe a shotgun, a two-shot shotgun. I don't know. When was the two-shot shotgun invented? But not 40 rounds, not slaughtering people at a lunar festival, not slaughtering people on the 4th of July, not slaughtering kids in schools. No, the AR-15 was nowhere near the mindset of the Republican or the Founding Fathers, or even the Republican mentality of the Founding Fathers. They had no clue what was coming down the line. So you're just stupid. But here we are, because we did not clamp down on this crap at Newtown. Look at the mentality. Nope, we have to have gun slaughters. We have to have gun slaughters. We have to have gun slaughters. At what freaking point are we going to wake up and say, F you, no, we are not going to have these gun slaughters anymore. I am tired of this. I am tired of this crap. Weapons designed for military use to slaughter as many human beings as quickly as possible should not be available to the general public. Period. And yet, you even talk about stopping illegal gun sales, and the gun kooks act like, why are you stopping illegal sales? What is wrong with you people? Is the whole goal here to get to a point where everyone eventually gets shot and the people who are lucky enough to survive finally say, well, guess this was a bad idea? I guess so. You're all broken people. You're all broken freaking people. Ban the assault weapons, for God's sakes. And somebody, will somebody give Representative Mike Loychik a freaking book? How the hell does a guy like that even get into politics? How do you get elected, you moron? Dear Lord. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Yeah, I you know, and I think once again, what you're really seeing here is something I wrote on a second post this morning, kind of in this unbelievable, really? You guys are for illegal gun sales. This is the hill you're going to die on now. Is that we have to make sure people can illegally sell the guns. Really? Because and you can say, well, that's not what I'm saying. Well, yeah, it is. it's, we shouldn't have any penalties for that. Well, that seems to be really pro-illegal gun sale-y. So, yeah. I wrote this morning. It's clear many pro-gun people insist we do nothing to try to stop this. Not because we have and it's failed. Actually, it's been successful in states. As a matter of fact, you go look at where gun crimes and gun violence is the worst. It's states with the least gun laws. States with the most gun laws actually have substantially less gun crime and deaths due to guns. It is true. So it has worked when it's tried to be regulated. And regardless of how many countries successfully regulate guns, we do that. They're terrified of regulating the guns because of one simple thing. They know it will work. Now, once again, common sense gun regulation all falls within the purview of the Second Amendment. This idea that everyone has to have a gun lock and loaded, round in the chamber, safety off, finger on the trigger at all times is this desperately depressing worldview of sad individuals who are so desperate for some opportunity to save Nakatomi Plaza from terrorists because their lives suck. They're 50-time losers who think that somehow that gun's going to make up for it. That's not what the Second Amendment says. You can regulate a well-regulated militia. You can regulate these things. And that's the reality. These people are terrified, terrified of gun regulations getting passed, and they work. So that's why this whole new thing of gun slaughters are an unnecessary evil, that the founding fathers wanted everyone to have a freaking bazooka, and that if you even try to stop illegal gun sales, well, you're making Jesus cry, I guess. I don't know. But the reality, the failure of this country was when young children were slaughtered in a classroom by a psychopath with an assault weapon designed for military combat. Our country, led by the Republicans, said, that's perfectly fine with us. And hence, here we are today. Hour two, Dr. Joe coming up. Hour number two of the show on your Monday. Good to be with you, Matt and Patrick here today. Dr. Joe coming up in just a few seconds. Did you get out and look at the spectacular views this morning with the frosty trees this morning around the metro area, Patrick?
Oh, unfortunately, I didn't quite get out early enough to see those. That's one of my favorite parts of winter.
It is. Actually, the state is actually stunningly pretty in winter. You don't have to drive around and go hike around in it. It actually is quite pretty. I got out today. Even though I have been fairly restrictive on a lot of times, I got to get photos if we're doing another calendar for 2024, which I hope we're doing. I got to get pictures for January and December. And me having pictures just in my basement, probably not the best idea. I mean, I don't think anyone really wants to see that photo. I don't think that's going to be the seller for January. I am very limited though. I am kind of pushing it. I'm happy. So one thing that comes up is this week is I've had my six week checkup after the back surgery to fix the back after the accident. Yeah, I gotta get that checked out. I will say this. I've been somewhat stunned at the volume of bills that come in here. I'm very grateful I have insurance. I'm very grateful I got health insurance. The stuff's going to get covered, but my God, man. And, yeah, it is scary. Have you seen, Patrick, and I ask you this, have you seen this video that is making the rounds on the internet from this woman named Angelia DeSell? And apparently this is not the only person who has done this. Multiple people are putting out these videos where they're trying to look like they're shaking violently because of their Pfizer vaccine, and they just are violently shaking. But as many medical people have pointed out, that if you're having seizures, that's not what it looks like in any capacity. That it looks completely and totally like, well, they're trying to pretend this. Have you seen any of these videos, Patrick?
I actually have seen one video. It's like, oh, it was a healthy, vibrant person to know a year after the shot, and you see the person kind of barely able to walk across the room, and I'm like, eh.
Angela's funniest moment here is at the end when she sits down and she shakes her legs so randomly. That's not real. I can tell you this right now. One of two things is going to happen. Either if you are really, if this really did happen, you should be suing the Pfizer or Moderna or whoever for doing this to you. Because if you're not suing them, I can guarantee you they're going to be suing you for defamation, because it sure seems like you guys are making this stuff up. And if I'm the vaccination companies, I'm picking up a sacrificial lamb, just one of them, Angelina, or someone else, and suing them into the Stone Age just to stop these stupid videos from going out there. The one woman who's violently shaking, but then all of a sudden her hand is perfectly fine when she wants to grab onto something. Yeah, okay. That's how that works. Speaking of medicine and COVID and all these things, it is an absolute pleasure to have back on the show Dr. Joe Eastman. He has worked for NASA. He's worked for the LTER. He's worked for Colorado State University, and he's currently part of the University of Texas Austin's COVID modeling team. He crunches the numbers about COVID and gives us the latest updates, and he's kind enough today to join us to talk about them. Dr. Joe, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me back, Matt.
Have you seen those videos of the people that are supposedly having the fake tremors?
Oh, my gosh. I can't even put in words what I think of those. It wouldn't come over your airwaves.
As someone yourself who's a very intelligent science person, I know you're not a psychologist or anything like this, but I just get the impression is these people are so desperate to believe the lies that it never once crosses their mind that if they were right, we'd have millions of dead because of vaccines. We'd have, millions of people with all these symptoms in there, and it just has not happened. But yet, because they're so desperate to keep this alive, they're humiliating themselves online to try to make themselves look like they're really victims.
You exactly read my thoughts. I was thinking the same darn thing, and they were very amusing, I must admit, when I first saw them. But my gosh, the depths! Do these people even have a line? Are they going to keep descending into the abyss? Or I don't know. I can't even describe these kind of folks. They lack humanity, as far as I'm concerned. I'll put it that bluntly.
Let's talk about where things are at right now. We had the new variant that was showing up, that was giving you some fairly large concerns in regards to whether it was going to break out. But yet, it at least right now, I'm either the media is just not covering it, or I'm not seeing the case rise as it was there. What are you seeing going on right now in regards to the viral load and the spread of the new variants of COVID?
I hate to say it, but sometimes the media is kind of biased towards where the market is that this thing's coming out of, I guarantee you that would have been happening here in the Midwest or flyover country, as many call it. You probably wouldn't have heard much about it, but the fact that it's hitting the Northeast and these massive population centers, it did. And I'm grateful that it gets the attention that it is. That's a good thing. But, right now, and this is still a working hypothesis on my part, but this thing, was bred in America, and it came about so darn fast that, after people get it, a couple of weeks later, they have this high immunity to it, okay? Mm-hmm. And it hasn't quite reached other parts of the country yet. But at the same time, because of that high immunity, it kind of backs off for a little bit. And I think we're seeing it kind of settle down for a while. Mm-hmm. I can almost guarantee you it's going to come back. And when it starts hitting other population centers really hard, you're going to see it. I think they call it endemic. It's a very localized response to what's going on, a heightened response to what's going on. And we're going to start to see that. It's going to be popping up all over the country. I can't believe people. They wake up, and this is doctors and experts and such, and they wake up and, oh, the pandemic's over. Look at the numbers are down. Well, wait a second. Polio, measles, all these things. WHO looks at the data for years and years before they declare it's over. You just don't wake up the next day and say, oh, it's all done. Everything's cool. Go about your business. So, just have some patience here and look at it with a little caution, because there's still plenty of time for this thing to increase, and I hope I'm wrong. That'd be the greatest thing in the world.
And that's the thing, is if if we're wrong, we're wrong. Great, great. But if you're wrong, if you're wrong, yikes. When you talk about the East Coast, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, how bad is it getting? I'm guessing Boston, New York, Philly, D.C. How bad is it getting on the East Coast right now?
Yeah, they've kind of reached a little bit of a lull right now. It peaked about a week ago in most of the spots on the East Coast, but the hospitals are still seeing a pretty dramatic amount of beds occupied right now. And the other thing is, you look at the death rates right now and what the reported cases are according to the CDC. 50,000, but wait, they're reporting death numbers around 600. That doesn't quite jive up. I don't know if you've heard of an adjoint model, but most people probably haven't. It's basically the model runs backwards. And you go back to some initial conditions to get the idea of what was really happening at that time. So if I apply that to the number of deaths we got right now, that implies that there should be about a little over 3 million active cases reported if we were catching them all right now. So that gives you an idea what's going on and the trouble I have trying to wade through all these numbers. It's just really tough, and the model's all over the place. I'll say that right now too. I got one that's predicting 60 million new cases a day in the middle of February, and another that just says about 2 million. That's why I hesitate to publish things right now, because I don't want to alarm people unnecessarily, but then again, I want to want to let them know what's possibly going to happen. So that's kind of where I'm sitting right now.
Well, and when you're looking at, and we got this new variant. Now, I'm going to just let you know, my daughter, this last week, Wednesday, Thursday, parts of Friday, the weekend before, was exhausted. If you basically were to tell me what she had, I'd almost say, guarantee she had COVID. We tested her repeatedly. It wasn't coming up as positive. Now, were the tests flawed? Were we not doing it correct? It could be, possibly, obviously there's getting tested now is not nearly as easy. This is a problem, because I've heard that this variant, the subvariant that we're running through right now, that a lot of people are feeling like the tests are not, the vaccines are not necessarily working really well with XBB, nor are the tests, and that, and that was the one thing I can worry about, because, like I said, this is a kid that is not a napper, is not someone that takes a lot of naps or is really tired. She was out like a light for 3 days. She's doing better now. She's doing better now. But still, I mean, how concerned should we be that the testing and the vaccines that we have right now are starting to get so far away from the variants that we are experiencing that they're just not reliable?
Oh boy, you hit the nail on the head. We should be very concerned right now. The XBB 1.5 is 20 one times more efficient at evading our vaccines than the original Omicron, which the new bivalent booster was designed for. It's basically saying, I don't see you. I'm going to infect you. I don't care. And then the other thing is the testing. These home tests are, they're not worthless, but boy, they really got to be taken with a grain of salt. Their accuracy is just, you might almost flip a coin if you get symptoms with these tests. It's unfortunate. And, they're closing down testing sites all over the country. And, what are people going to do?
Well, and when I was at the hospital with the car accident, a month plus ago, the test they do is that they do that deep nasal swab, and people, you're just not going to get people that are going to do that at home. That's not something that's it's against the better judgment of people. And I think that's the first thing I thought about with my daughter is that is this one of those cases where we need to go in and get one of those deep tests, a nasal swab test to make sure, because when we used to go get COVID tests, like we'd do one of these drive-in clinics, they'd always do the quick test, and then they would do the deep nasal test. And it seemed like that was the best way to do it because you could get a quick response, but then they could come back and tell you, oh, by the way, that quick response was wrong. And today, unless you're going to a hospital, you're not going to get that deep nasal swab anymore. And that really seems to be the one that tells you if you've got it.
You're spot on there. It's unfortunate that the access isn't there for people to do this because you get a lot of people wandering around. Well, plus there's the asymptomatic, which is up to about 20% now. But you got people wandering around and like, gosh, I just don't feel right. What's going on? My tests don't show anything. And they very well could have it. I mean, hopefully your daughter didn't have it. I pray she didn't, but. You can't know unless you get the good test that hospitals deliver to you. And it's kind of sad in a way. And, and then we come out today and we hear the FDA saying that they're going to go, they're transitioning to a once-a-year COVID vaccine. People like me that have been stuck at my house for, since this thing started, and a lot of others that are immune suppressed and other complications and kids and stuff, that tells me it's like, I surrender, I give up, the heck with you.
Really?
You can just stay home and we'll go about our business and keep mutating this virus. It saddens me.
So because I was going to ask you about that, because that is the new recommendation is, once a year with your flu shot, you get a COVID shot now, which I think makes sense. I mean, to a point, but it does seem to be, considering this is a virus, which in any given year, we seem to get four or five varieties. The way I understand flu shots is there's a suspicion of what's going to be the primary flu variant in any given year. And they gear that vaccine for that specific flu variant. Doesn't mean that you can't get a different variant. Doesn't mean a different variant can't come through. But there does seem to be a level of protection that comes with that. COVID seems very different. And then I think that, as you said, it's these like this XBB variant. It's very different than the other ones that we were having before. Do you feel as if we might get to a point where it might just be a biannual? I mean, I think a biannual vaccination, probably if we kind of got into more of a program like that, at least that seems more successful or at least more proactive towards the COVID variant, the virus itself.
Right. There's a couple of schools of thought there. One thing is, as you mentioned, when you look at the flu versus COVID, flu has been around for thousands of years. A lot of people died from it back in the early times.
Still do,
and it's evolved. And what's that?
They still do, too.
Right. Yeah. Precisely right. The population has adapted over a long period of time. COVID is still just a baby, and we're not sure what kind of variants we're going to get. There's a lot of new methods that are suggesting that the explosion in variants, we're at the tip of it. there's going to be a lot more coming down the pipeline. And then you look at China, they said 1.4 billion people, and they just came out and said 80% of the population has been infected, which I don't believe for a second. You know, otherwise you'd have so many deaths there right now, it would be a tragedy. But, you know, they're incubating more, and supposedly their variants aren't even the XBB 1.5, but they're older variants that are circulating through there right now. So when that the other ones hit that population, it's going to be Katie bar the doors, I think. And they still haven't realized what is the full impact of Corona in terms of economics and supply chain, too. I mean, if you want to put a dollar amount on it, there you go. We could be headed for a rough time again in terms of the world recession. So there's so many factors going on right now. It's hard to keep up with it sometimes.
Well, and I saw the story in China that their population has actually dropped, and they feel as if it's COVID-related, that people are just, you know, you're not going out that much. Do you really want to raise a kid in China is different than the United States. You know, in the United States, you know, even when the most people were dying, people were like, I want chicken wings at a bar. And you're like, really? China's different, but it is kind of one of those things where I think the social impact of COVID, I mean, that's the next thing that we're going to talk about. I'll give the floor to you on this. Not only let's talk about the long-term impact, but let's talk about the social impact, because I think that we're still not done with this and we don't realize the ripples that are coming off of this COVID pandemic and how they're going to change us. I mean, how many people, right. I was at my wife's holiday party this weekend, and you know, so many of the people she hadn't even seen before because in person, because they're all doing it remotely. I think the way we work, I think the way, you know, we have families, I think a lot of this stuff is going to get changed by COVID.
I agree with that. And you talk about drinking. My latest update newsletter, the rise in alcohol consumption among our youth is just, it's going way up. And, you know, you don't think about these other little subtleties that are going on based on our changes in our social behavior. And it's kind of frightening when you think about it. There's a lot of things that are causing depression, and this country still doesn't know how to deal with mental health properly. And there's so many impacts we're going to see down the road that it's astounding. It really is.
One of the things I wanted to make sure I mentioned here as well, this is the last week's report. We did lose 54 people in 1 week. From COVID. And that's, once again, it's just, these are numbers that blow my mind, because prior to COVID, if we had anything in Minnesota that killed 54 people in 1 week, the entire state would shut down and try to figure out what they could do to stop it. Today, right. It's not even a speed bump on the news cycle. And I hope this is the part that I really do. I still is annoying me a lot, is the fact that the way that we look at human life now as so little that just who cares? 54 people died. 54 people died. That's basically almost six a day. Almost eight a day.
Yeah, I know. And your discussion on gun slaughter. I mean. People, I just can't fathom it, to tell you the truth. But, you know, people have become so desensitized to human suffering and tragedy that I feel we're losing a large part of our humanity through mass media and things that are, you know, just kind of like, well, okay, this happened again, you know, and you don't see the real impacts of it. You know, people got to experience it personally, generally, to really react to things a lot of times. And that's something that I think has become a norm because of desensitizing our population to violence and other forms of suffering that are going on.
Well, and how about, Dr. Joe, how about if you had one of these COVID deniers who got sick and was really sick, and then came out and said, boy, I was wrong. This is dangerous. This is nasty. You need to get vaccinated. Instead, they do everything in their power to shut down and prevent anyone from finding out how they died. There's far more effort to basically preserve their anti-COVID legacy than there is about trying to help the population. And I think there's a huge difference in just 5 years of where we are as a society and our humanity, is that the inability of people to say, guess I was wrong, everyone should get vaccinated, be careful with this. Nope, it's about, you know, it sucks to be me, I've been horribly wrong, but I'm going to die and I'm going to make sure that my ill-fated advice goes on forever.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're spot on with that observation, man. It saddens me. And I don't know. What is the solution? How are we gonna start turning this thing around? I struggle with that daily.
Yeah.
You know, it's always one of those things in the back of my mind. Thankfully, we got people like you. And, oh, gosh, I got to say, I had goosebumps at the beginning of your show. You and Rick Smith in the same spot, that's like a dream world for me.
Rick is, my show is better when you are on it. My show is better when Rick Smith's on it. This has been a nice show so far. Rick is absolutely top notch on this. It's always a pleasure to have him on the air. And I know that you enjoy both Rick and mine, so I'm glad that we're able there. And make sure you catch his show 8 to 10 at nights here. One last thing here. Is there another vaccine, or another booster that's coming out here? I've seen some mixed reports on that.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple different paths that are going on. And, you know, we're kind of on the edge of this, you know, whole genetic engineering thing. I mean, we're at the tip of the iceberg on that. That's really exciting stuff. And I did put something on that in my newsletter, too.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a push for a more universal vaccine, and then there's another push to update the bivalent. And if I look at it right, and from what I've read, it's been very, very sparse information on it. I don't know if it's the drug companies wanting to keep things secret or what's going on exactly, but we're looking at probably a year away from any kind of solution like that. You know, if it's designed for the current variants, okay, well, that's going to buy us time. Let's use it properly, unlike our bivalent one that we just came out with for Omicron, which we completely dropped the ball with. You know, what, 18% of the public has gotten it now? Mm-hmm. Come on, people. It helps, even if you know, it doesn't prevent the infection of the newer variants, yes, but it helps in your outcomes and your hospitalization rates and all these things that just trickle down on so many levels. So, you know, keep it up, Matt. Let people know, and I really appreciate all your work. So.
Well, and speaking of helping and letting people know, josepheastman.substack.com. I'll link to this. That's the blog. Follow it. Keep up to date. And like I said, they got another booster. I'm down at the VA. I'm getting that as soon as it comes on out. As soon as I'm eligible, I'm getting it. Because you know what? I don't want to. I'm pretty happy not being sick. So I'll go with that. Dr. Joe, as always, my show is better when you're on it, my friend. All my best.
Oh,
we'll link to the blog. And thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
All right. Until next time, take care.
Take care, Dr. Joe. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Oh, I got good news, too. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Hey, you know, I got to tell you how much I do enjoy watching the traitorous bastards who tried to storm the Capitol. They get convicted, and they're going to go to jail for a long time. That's just great. Four members of the Oath Keepers were convicted Monday of seditious conspiracy on the January 6th attack. The second major trial of far-right extremists accused of plotting to forcibly keep Donald Trump in power. The verdict against Joseph Hackett of Sarasota, Florida, traitor, Roberta Minuta of Prosper, Texas, Traitor. David Morshall of Punta Gorda, Florida. Traitor. And Edward Vallejo of Phoenix. Traitor. Traitor, traitor, traitor. Comes weeks after a different jury convicted the group's leader, Stuart Rhodes, in the mob attack that halted the certification of President Joe Biden's electoral victory. It's another major victory for the Justice Department, which also tried to secure sedition convictions against the former leader of the Proud Boys and his four associates. The trial against Enrique Tarrio and his lieutenants opened early this month in Washington is expected to last several weeks. They're some of the most serious cases brought by far in the sweeping January 6 investigation, which continued to grow 2 years after the riot. The Justice Department has brought nearly 1,000 cases, and the tally increases by the week. Defense attorneys sought to downplay violent messages as mere bluster. I'm going to kill you. What, you're getting me arrested? I was just joking. Said the Oath Keepers came to Washington to provide security at events before the riot. They seized on, apparently for storming the Capitol. They stormed the prosecutors' lack of evidence that the Oath Keepers had an explicit plan to storm the Capitol. I will say this took 3 days to find them guilty, which if you think about the charges they had to go through and the evidence they had to review, that is actually a pretty quick turnaround, but not nearly as quick as this absolute horrible piece of crud, Richard Barnett. This is the Arkansas jackass who was photographed with his feet propped on the desk of then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office, the U.S. Capitol. He was convicted on Monday of joining a mob attack on the building 2 years ago. The jury unanimously convicted him on all eight counts of his indictment, including felony charges and civil disorder of obstructing of official proceeding, in 3 hours. That is literally like, okay, on first charge here, bubbity 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 bup, up, all guilty. Okay, second charge, bubbity 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 bup, oh, all guilty. Third charge, bubbity 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 bup, all guilty. All right, we're not even going to get the free subs. You would think they would slow it down just to get the lunch. Yeah, let's get some subs in here, and then we'll convict them. They did their job. He's scheduled to be sentenced in May. They basically did not remand him to custody, though, because they said that he's remained crime-free. But 62 years old, he's going to jail for a while, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I got some audio here. Now, if you're not following Scott McFarland, the CBS reporter. He's fantastic. He's been covering all this stuff from the get-go, and he really is a great authority. He was there, and as a matter of fact, you're going to hear a voice ask a question of, this is Barnett's lawyer, who looks like Popeye Doyle. He's wearing a Popeye Doyle hat, and he's outside the courthouse. Basically, he's going to talk about why he's arguing that this is not a jury of his peers. Patrick, if you've got that, go ahead and play that audio, please.
What did you mean by they're not your peers? They look like American citizens who went to jury duty and got called?
So let me answer that question. That's a very simple discussion. Washington, D.C., number one, it's not a state. Number two, he's not surrounded by a jury of his peers, a jury of people from Arkansas, a place where he came from, or a jury that has a political composition of anything that's like the rest of the United States. Washington, D.C. is something like 95-96% Biden voters, right? So that we believe that that plays a crucial role in the political factors that are ever present in these cases. We argued the need to change juries, to change venue extensively in this case, other cases as well. And everybody who's a January 6th that has been accused of a crime is looking to have their case heard somewhere else.
Oh, how, yeah. Well, first of all, let me say this. Your guy was an absolutely horrible human being. I mean, let's just be honest. He's an absolutely horrible human being. Big old Barnett is just he's just, why can't I just kick open the door of the Speaker of House and do this stuff? And when he took the stand, and by the way, it was a disastrous turn when he took the stand in his own defense. That was not a smart move. And by the way, I will say this. One of the things that's not being reported a lot in these cases is, with every one of these convictions, there are so few of these guys that are getting off the hook. with every one of these convictions, there's a lot of other people who are now just taking the plea, and that's a good thing. Now, that being said, I want to get back to what he said there. Because, funny, does that sound a little familiar to you? Wasn't it last week we had on the appeal of Derek Chauvin the argument that even though the crime happened on 38th in Chicago, which, let me just check my notes, that is Minneapolis. Yes. 38th, he was a Minneapolis cop who murdered a man in the streets of Minneapolis, that the people of Minneapolis or of Hennepin County having the right to judge him is somehow unfair. Because it's just, they're a bunch of Democratic liberals down there. And that's basically what he's saying here. That Washington, D.C. doesn't deserve to gauge these criminals, to prosecute these criminals, even though the crime happened in Washington, D.C., because it's not the most conservative county in the most conservative state with a jury of all pro, in the case, you know, a pro-Republican, pro-Trump, pro-cop jurors. Unless it's that, this is not a fair trial. I want to ask you something here. Just let's put this request into perspective for everyone out there. Say I committed a crime in, give me the most conservative county in Idaho. Idaho is the go-to. You want conservative, Idaho is there. Although Montana lately does seem to be trying to give it a run for its money. But we'll go with Idaho. Go to the most conservative county in Idaho. And I commit a crime there. And then I flee to New York or D.C. or San Francisco. Would you think the conservatives would insist, well, yeah, you can try him for that crime in San Francisco? No, of course not. They would never tolerate that. That's the argument is that they're trying to make, is that somehow, some way, we should allow people to shop for the jury that's going to give them the best chance at winning, as opposed to allowing the people where the crime happened to get their right to review this case and determine if the individual is guilty. Barnett and the rest of these clowns, the problem that they have, and by the way, this idea of the rest of America voted for Joe Biden. Washington, D.C. wasn't the only place that voted for Joe Biden. And a lot of the country in what was supposed to be a big Republican year voted Democrat this year. So, you know, it really is, when these lawyers make this argument, it really is, we have to find a state where that state is right wing. That's that they are specifically saying that that's got to be the case. I mean, okay, fine. Let's move it to Dakota. We'll put it to St. Paul. Well, no, that can't be it. Why not? Well, because. Okay, we'll move it to Duluth. You can't move it to Duluth. All right, Rochester. We can't move it to Rochester. St. Cloud, a little bit better, but still it's not. No, you can't do it in St. Cloud. This is the travesty of it all. You guys committed your crime there, and you are waking up from your bubble. And the thing which is funny is you guys seem shocked that people are pissed off at you. You're all a bunch of traitors to America. There's not a lot of them, but there are some Republicans who will agree with that assessment of you traitorous jerks. You're horrible people, and you're getting what you deserve. You're getting everything you deserve. You can't allow the kindergartner who likes to spread their feces on the wall and act like it's art to be able to be held on the same Parthenon as the top institutions of this country. And this is the problem that we have got right now, is by enabling this element of the right wing, of this extremist, these losers that used to have to go on out to compounds out in Montana and live, because not because they were trying to get away from it all, but because they were 40-time losers and it was the only place they could go, that they basically they could exist without being reminded of how much freaking losers they were. And when the Republican Party opened that gate and said, come on out, guys, you can run for office, you can be part of the decision-making, that's when you got into this mess. I will say it's interesting to watch. One of the things that I'd heard, and I don't know where this is at, but one of the things that the far-right Republicans are trying to get from McCarthy in regards to a concession to get him the speakership was some sort of full investigation into the conditions that the January 6 rioters were being held in jail. Mind you, none of these people thought jail was bad before. They didn't have any problem with jail prior to their guys going to it. And now all of a sudden, and they're not even trying to hide it. It's, well, our guys shouldn't have to be there with those people. No, you created a corporate penal system in this country that treats the prisoners of this country pretty freaking rough. And now that your guys are in there and you're realizing how rough it is, now all of a sudden you're calling it unfair. No, you're all traitors. You're all traitors. And frankly, I would lock you guys up for a long time and throw away the freaking key. I'm glad we got convictions on this guy. I'm glad. And like I said, that took 3 hours. That's the best part of this whole story. 8 charges, 3 hours. They literally led the charge, read each charge once, took a vote, marked it down, filled out the paperwork, went to the next charge, read it out, took a vote, filled out the paperwork. That's all that happened. You went guilty, 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 guilty. Done. I won't get the free sub. But it's also good to see the seditious conspiracy charges against those guys. And I, by the way, one last thing I want to say about Proud Boys. I remember when I was talking about them, and I had a former friend of mine post up on Facebook about, these are just innocent people that are proud of their culture. It was a week after I got what looked to be a death threat from one of them. These extremist organizations need to be shut down because they're not helping this country in any capacity. So Justice Department, nicely done. Keep locking them up. Absolutely. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hey, Patrick, well, let me ask you a quick question. I hear about these court verdicts. It makes me want to go watch. I think the three best legal movies of all time. Paul Newman in The Verdict. Love that movie. Michael Clayton with George Clooney. Phenomenal. And then I always liked, it's A Few Good Men. I also like 12 Angry Men. That's always a pretty good one. Do you have one, a legal movie that you're a big fan of?
I would have to think about it since you're kind of putting me on the spot. But it's certainly an interesting genre, but it's not really one that I can say, yeah, that's my movie right there.
Go. I want you to do me a favor. And if you need it, I've got the DVD. I'll loan it to you. Watch The Verdict with Paul Newman. Phenomenal film. And yeah, and here's the one thing I think that sometimes makes these legal thrillers somewhat good is because the nature of a trial, you have kind of a continuing rise of tension, and the payoff generally can be really good. So I would go watch The Verdict, go watch Michael Clayton, or go, you know, and, you know, I think those are my two favorites. I really do like those. 952-946-6205. Governor Walz on Monday, he basically said his budget proposals will include $300 million that would go to cities and counties for public safety. Walz unveiled a third of four pieces of his budget proposal, with the final piece coming tomorrow. Walz's budget includes a new statewide initiative to address violent crime, $4.5 million upfront and $1.5 million ongoing for grants to help local agencies buy body-worn cameras. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey said in a statement the budget proposals would help bolster the city's approach to community safety, prioritizing police and 911 dispatchers' recruitment and retention. Walz also proposed $1.5 billion for a housing budget that includes permanent funding to end veterans' homelessness. Nice. Increase affordable housing and prevent homelessness. Once again, how many times during the campaign season, especially when Democrats of the day, we were talking to guys in the outstate Minnesota who are saying the problem we have is there is no affordable housing in many of these towns. You got to have this. So I'm hoping that some of this is going to be earmarked for rural Minnesota. Walz also proposed creating a Minnesota Care public option, which would allow people to buy into the state's public health insurance program for low-income workers. He also proposed more spending for combat with opiate crisis. Sweet Lord, Governor Walz, brilliant. Absolutely. Isn't that exactly what I've been calling for the farmers? Put a Minnesota Care option for the public out there so that the farmers can buy into it so they don't have to go work off the farm just to afford health insurance. Outstanding. I like that idea. Days after a 16-year-old boy was shot during a fight at the St. Paul Recreation Center, Walz proposed a gun control package. It includes universal background checks on all farm sales, extreme risk protection orders, which allow family members to petition for temporary orders to remove firearms from people who are a threat to themselves or others, raising the minimum age for purchasing military-style firearms to 21, and banning high-capacity magazines. There's just no darn reason we should have handguns in recreation centers. There's no reason to have handguns at the state capitol. Walz's gun proposals will likely face stiff opposition from Republicans in the legislature. Newly elected Democrats in greater Minnesota swing districts also have shown little appetite for gun control proposals. Democrats would need every vote of the 34-33 DFL majority to have to pick up the Republican votes. His budget proposal also includes $1 million annually to support firefighter training and education and increase funding for local fire agencies, and money for the creation of the Office of Missing and Murdered African-American Women to combat violence against the trafficking of black women and girls. My God, can I just point out the work that people have done with the Native American women who have, you know, the missing and murdered Native American women and bringing their plight to the forefront. Yeah, come on. This is these ugly truths that Americans don't want to hear, that Republicans are frantic that you don't hear. That there is this inherent bias in the system to minority women, that they get abused, get kidnapped, get murdered, and no one seems to freaking care. My God, it's about time we fix that. That seems like one of those no-brainers, absolute no-brainers. Overall, I'm liking the idea of this. It's going to be interesting to watch the gun control issue, especially as more and more of these slaughters happen. How long will these moderate Democrats from outstate Minnesota hold up any kind of common sense gun laws? Because the reality is we shouldn't have these gun murders, and they do happen everywhere throughout the entire state. I'm hoping we get something done. Kudos. Is Governor Walz listening to my show? Can I take credit for the Minnesota Care public option? Because that's a good idea. I've been calling for that for about 6 years now. Make sure every farmer can buy in on that one. Minnesota Care public option. That is a great freaking idea. Democrats, make that happen, because I guarantee the Republicans don't want that to happen. Native Roots Radio, I'm awake. That comes up in the 6 o'clock hour. Have a great one. We are back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.